The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of this show, you are free to do so. Just send us an email so that we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop. This week we spoke with Alex about the Bend the Bars conference, which is taking place in Columbus, Ohio on the weekend of August 26th through the 29th. This is a gathering which was called for in direct support for the September 9th National Prisoner Work Strike, which we've covered here somewhat on The Final Straw, but you can see more information on the net. And this conference is one of the only gatherings that we know of which explicitly centers the work of people doing direct support with incarcerated people, as opposed to NGOs or nonprofits. In this conversation, we speak about the intentions for the conference, as well as touching on the prison condition in the United States, the national work strike, and many other topics. You can learn more about this event by visiting bendthebars.noblogs.org, and you can RSVP to this event or correspond with the organizers or request support for attending the conference by emailing them at bendthebars@riseup.net.
Along this week's episode, we have an hour-long conversation with organizers from the June 26th anti-fascist rally in Sacramento, California, that routed the attempted organizing on the Capitol steps by white nationalist groups, the Traditionalist Workers' Party and the Golden State Skinheads, among other groups. The TWP and GSS rally was an attempt to make a symbolic space and inspire further and more public demonstrations by these and affiliated groups. However, the 40 members who showed up were quickly routed by the diverse Antifa numbering 400 or so. In the ensuing fracas, 9 Antifa were hospitalized, most serious among them for stab wounds. During the hour-long podcast, we hear 3 organizers talk about the medic preparation, what the event looked like, media responses, post-confrontation security for those hospitalized, and more. It's well worth noting that money is still being raised to help cover medical costs of those injured on June 26th. To help, you can visit https://rally.org/June26th. To hear this podcast, find our blog post for this episode on Bending the Bars, and find the link for the SAC Antifa podcast. Or you can visit thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. While there, click on the podcasting link at the top of the front page and follow the instructions to get our features on a regular basis.
But first, here is an announcement regarding Anti-Phoenix by our comrades in the so-called Czech Republic. Last week, the appeal court hearing took place in the High Court in Prague. Russian vegan straight-edge anarchist Igor Sevkov, who was appealing his sentence, a 2-year expulsion from the Czech Republic for video recording someone else graffitiing prison walls during a support demonstration, was given a new sentence. The judgment remained the same. The High Court still finds him complicit in criminal damage, but the judge changed the penalty. The new sentence is that Igor is banned from attending any sporting or cultural event or any event like a manifestation, demonstration, benefit, mobilization, protest, or any other action within the anarchist movement. His support team does not know yet what it means exactly, but it is likely that Igor will have to visit a probation office anytime there is a big action, and he will be surveilled during any other event by undercover state agents and spies. If he violates his sentence, he can get put behind bars for up to 3 years. His support crew does not know if Igor will follow this sentence, try to oppose it legally, or just follow his own agenda and feelings and see what happens in the future. In any case, he has his support teams and our full support. If you want to support Igor, rather than congratulating him on his, quote, better sentence, ask him what kind of support he needs, for he is in a very uncomfortable situation. And mostly keep changing your environment into a world where repression, exclusion, and borders are exchanged for mutual solidarity and freedom. To learn more about this situation, you can visit their support website at antiphoenix.noblogs.org. That's A-N-T-I-F-E-N-I-X.
While national coverage continues surrounding reactions to police killings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Philando Castile in Minneapolis, and so many other people of color and significantly black men killed by police, protests continue here in Asheville around the police killing of Jai Jerry Williams on July 2nd of this year. Jai was shot 7 times and killed by Sergeant Tyler Radford at the Deverview Apartments in West Asheville on July 2nd. Since then, family, community members, and activists have continued acting in public to make sure the police account of what happened on July 2nd does not go unchallenged. This activity includes presenting a counter-narrative to the story the police presented, working to support family and making space for their needs, marches downtown, flyering, interceding at public meetings, vigils outside of the Asheville Police Department headquarters, and also a sit-in that ran for about 36 hours in the HQ lobby and led to the arrest of 7 people on July 22nd. Demands of the sit-in included the firing, arrest, and indictment of Sergeant Radford for the murder of Jai Williams. Support and resistance events continue. If you're in the Asheville area and want to help out and draw attention to the case and bring home the message that this touristic mountain town suffers the same plague as the rest of the U.S. in terms of police unaccountability and systemic racism, you can join folks in the streets at the vigil outside of the downtown police headquarters at the daily vigils at 6 p.m. and plug in. Much respect to those resisting. Solidarity with the family. Shut it down. And now a word from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain.
What? Let's talk about slavery. The economic, logistical, political, and social order of the United States was built on slavery. From the beginning, colonizers took hostages and reduced them to property and subjected them to forced labor. Later on, the practice of chattel slavery was confined to the southern states and abolished in the northern states. But its continued practice greatly lowered the cost of production for food and textiles. As a consequence of this lower cost of living, citizens of the U.S. lived well and lived cheap. All this spare time led to privileged white people dreaming up great stuff. Privileged white people with the luxury of sitting around and sipping lemonade and dreaming up stuff. So that's how we got the steam engine and the cotton gin, the telegraph and the telephone. During the period of Southern slavery, while black slaves did all the work, privileged whites changed the whole world with innovations that made the United States first in everything. So really, everything the United States is, and everything it became, it owes to those who were sweating and bleeding and dying to keep the whole system going. Then, according to our national mythology, the Civil War was fought to end slavery. By that narrative, the abolitionist North fought the slave-owning South in order to free the slaves and end the immoral practice of reducing humans to chattel. That's a big fat lie, of course. Northern industrialists didn't want to end slavery, and second, slavery didn't end. The whole narrative is false. So look, Northern industrialists and Southern agriculturalists didn't fight over the existence of slavery, but over what form it would take. In the South, plantation owners employed the process of chattel slavery, owning and shackling humans for labor. In the North, industrialists employed the process of wage slavery, forcing humans under threat of starvation to perform labor. If you don't work, you don't eat. The difference was the wage slave had a few more privileges and could accumulate a bit more property, and he could conceivably go home to his own place for a few hours each day. But generally, workers in the coal mines or meatpacking plants or the steel mills were just as effectively owned as the chattel slaves in the South. Miners and meatpackers and stealers were just as dependent on the owners and just as subject to their whims as chattel slaves were to the plantation bosses. We don't think of wage slavery as slavery, so it's easy to sell us on the idea that the Northern industrialists cared so much about the wretched conditions of the oppressed blacks that they pushed the United States into a bloody, devastating war. But the truth is, we had two groups of privileged elites who were battling each other over the question of whose vision, whose idea of slavery and production should hold sway. Because the North won and the program of wage slavery prevailed, we are indoctrinated to think that we abolish the immoral practice of slavery.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
However, I would suggest to you that if the Southern chattel slavery program had won, our history books would recount a barbaric time when industrial elitists forced all of us into lives of drudgery before the universal application of the chattel slave system revolutionized our world and liberated us from work. To be clear, I'm not trying to advocate one form of slavery or another. The fact of the matter is, both of them suck. In both, you have a privileged elite at the top of the pyramid scheme who impose a brutal and detestable program upon everyone else. All forms of slavery are inimical to our natural impulse to freedom, to our inclination for autonomy and self-direction. All forms of slavery arise out of a pathology in thinking that there can be and should be master and slave, a state where many should serve the ruling few. Having said that, slavery still exists. Wage slavery is ubiquitous, a global form of simultaneous social control and mass production that reduces everyone to the role of labor generators that keep the entire program rolling on indefinitely to our own detriment. Wage slavery continues despite our abolitionist and egalitarian mythology to the contrary. It's time for a slave revolt, a global one. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Warren Correctional in Lebanon, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain, 243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org.
You have my permission to auto-tune me if you choose to.
Oh, nice. Cool. Well,
I know that helps people keep their attention sometimes.
Well, I'll try not to abuse that permission, but yeah, I make no promises. So the first question that I ask is, would you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do?
Well, my name is Alex, and I am part of an all-volunteer Books to Prisoners program in the Midwest. I got involved with this program a few years ago and stepped up to an organizing role just about a year ago now. We send our catalog of books and zines into prisons and then incarcerated people requesting specific titles that we keep in stock or general genres of books that we receive by donation. So like somebody might ask for, you know, a book about black power and a sci-fi novel or something like that. Or they might ask for specific titles that we list in our catalog. So we send that material for free, of course, and we keep all sorts of books, but our catalog that we curate is mostly of titles focused on radical and revolutionary subjects, especially convict unity and organizing inside of prisons. Most of those publications are written by people who are or have been incarcerated and who did organize or are still organizing inside of institutions.
The authors
of our most popular requests would be unknown to, I think, most people unfamiliar with anti-prison work, but we also send a high volume of titles that people are more familiar with, like George Jackson, Angela Davis, Michelle Alexander, things like that.
Are the materials that you send exclusively political? You mentioned like sci-fi and fantasy earlier. Do you send that as well?
Yeah, we kind of blur the line that a lot of prisoner support organizations stick to. So we think, first of all, that all prisoners are political. We think that supporting people who are incarcerated is not a value-free, nice thing to do. So we do focus on radical and revolutionary work because that's the kind of work that we want to. We don't pretend to be unbiased or something like that. But we also understand that conditions of confinement can be incredibly brutal for the people inside. And I know for sure that if I was locked up in solitary somewhere, I would definitely want to have a moment with a sci-fi novel if I could find someone to help me. help me get that kind of material. So
yeah, no doubt.
We pay the most attention to curating the catalog in terms of like what kinds of radical and revolutionary literature we can keep and what kinds of material we'll be able to make it through the mailrooms. But we keep all kinds of books and we fill all of the orders we receive. So we don't take the non-political or apolitical orders and toss them out. We fill every single one that comes in.
Gotcha. Do you have much political correspondence between people on the inside and your group?
Yes, and more than just correspondence. We do help set people up with pen pals that are interested in keeping correspondence with people on a personal level. And we also publish quite a bit of work. So when folks on the inside get around to wanting to put together some sort of, or they can send us a manuscript or something like that, and we will often type it up and make it available to people inside so that convicts are able to produce work and then have it distributed by our organization. And again, that's usually political in nature, but sometimes we've got a few workout zines that we just put into print last fall from a person incarcerated in Ohio who wanted to share his knowledge of how to get into shape while inside with other prisoners. So, and there's some other pursuits that we've done. Like, we got a lot of requests for a while for producing a venue for convicts to have their art shown. And so we were able to organize art shows based on the work that people inside sent to us. So we were able to secure a gallery space and put the art that convicts had made up on the walls and auction the work off to people on the outside that wanted to help support artists on the inside. And we were able to send the money that we made from those sales back into the commissary accounts of the prisoners who produced the work.
That's so awesome. Like, all of this, I don't know, to listeners who maybe perhaps are like slightly more unfamiliar with prison books programs, things like a workout zine or things like an art show can be super, super crucial to folks' mental health on the inside, because every aspect of prison life is so heavily regulated, even where you can move, how you can move, what kind of space you have. So having, you know, something as simple as a workout zine, I think could, and prison is such an institution based on mutual isolation between people who are like on the inside and people who are on the outside. So I think it's really f-ing rad that y'all are doing this kind of like two-way correspondence. I love that.
Thank you very much.
How many people work with that program?
Oh, it varies month to month and year to year. It's summertime right now and people are off, you know, cavorting around doing their thing. We still usually pull in about, you know, 6 to 10 folks for our book packing nights. And, you know, in the winter months, the broader network that we're a part of is several dozen people that contribute to us in some way or other on the outside. It's a relatively small group and relatively low level of commitment for most of the people involved. But there's a few folks that live together in a collective house that manage the library, help keep everybody up to date on what the program's needs are, and allow people to know what sorts of opportunities they have to contribute to the work that we're doing.
Yeah, space is always the issue, I think. Like, there's a prison books in town that has always been just eternally struggling with the issue of space. And so it's it sounds cool that it's in a house where people live and can be comfortable too.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are here to talk about is the Bend the Bars conference that is happening actually quite soon in Ohio. And I was wondering if you would talk about a little bit about the conference and about how the idea for formulating it came about.
If I may, I think it would help to talk a bit about context.
Sure thing.
The Bend the Bars is going to be a convergence of prisoner direct support organizations in Columbus, Ohio, the weekend of August 26th at Barrack Rec Center. And it's pretty unique convergence because it will be centering the work of direct support organizations over the broader issue of like prison reform organizations or prison reform movements. The background for me personally is that through the Books to Prisoners program that I became part of here, I found my way into conversations around active convict organizing, and I discovered that the way in America's prisons are thousands and thousands upon thousands of incarcerated people that are coming together to find unity amongst themselves and to fight against the conditions of their confinement, as well as more recently, especially according to the most famous of these groups, the Free Alabama Movement, mm-hmm. is folks have also been developing strategies to bring down the prison industrial complex as a whole. Mm-hmm. So it was only through these conversations that I learned about all of this action happening, as well as, you know, dozens of other groups of convicts and undocumented detainees who are pursuing direct action inside of prisons, jails, and detention centers as well, all across the country. Some of these groups have had statewide work stoppages mm-hmm. with the participation of, in the case of the Free Alabama Movement, with the participation of thousands of convicts for weeks at a time, and won concessions just in the last few years. I wouldn't have learned about these actions through the mainstream news media, and even most alternative media don't know about organizing that's happening inside of prison. So it wasn't until I got involved with this book's prisoners program that I came into contact with direct correspondence with prisoners mm-hmm. that it's only through that I discovered what I would consider to be one of the most important people's movements of our generation, which is as articulated by people inside the struggle to end prison slavery. Those conversations are also where the idea for Bend the Bars came from. So representatives of various direct support organizations who would like to coordinate responses to the to an upcoming nationwide convict work stoppage have kind of been the minds in which this convergence has kind of seeded itself. There are lots of other organizations like well-funded nonprofits, you know, who fight for prison reform and to raise awareness of prison conditions and things like that. But because policy-focused and party-based and issue-based and other kinds of advocacy organizations have to devote most of their energy to engaging with people on the outside, I believe most of them have missed or ignored the immense amount of energy being leveraged inside of prisons. So presently, there are lots of individuals who are committed to standing in support of the strike, including ex-cons, activists, and family, and the people who are currently incarcerated. But the only national organizations working in support of the strike are the National Lawyers Guild, who have taken a formal stance for prison abolition, and everybody's favorite union, the Industrial Workers of the World. So if you're listening and you're interested in supporting this work, those are both organizations worth reaching out to. Bend the Bars, in particular, is going to be a convergence of organizations with both building outside support for the prison labor strike. This is scheduled to begin on September 8th, 2016. Bend the Bars will take place in Columbus, Ohio, the weekend of August 26th. Bend the Bars will be a convergence of prisoner direct support organizations, also individuals. There are lots of individuals mm-hmm. in the Midwest who do prisoner direct support on their own. Mm-hmm. And we're coming together with the goal of building outside support for a prison labor strike, a nationwide mm-hmm. prison strike that's scheduled to begin on the 9th of September. That's the anniversary of Attica, the uprising at Attica. Our convergence is going to take place in Columbus, Ohio on the weekend of August the 26th. And it will include a public demonstration at the State House in Columbus at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. on the evening of Saturday the 27th. The decision to center the work of direct support organizations, ex-cons, and people currently incarcerated will, I think, make for a unique gathering because it's going to be a gathering of individuals and organizations who are, I'd say, unaccustomed to doing most of their work in the spotlight, right? Mm-hmm. These are Books to Prisoners programs and folks doing prisoner direct support, I think, are mostly noticed by the people that they engage with directly and not the general public. So it'll be interesting to bring folks that are doing this work out of the background and into center stage.
Definitely.
For preparing for finding ways to coordinate our support for the nationwide strike.
How do you anticipate people will like the limelight? Do you think they'll like it, or do you think that it'll freak people out?
I don't know. The folks on the organizing committee have been kind of all around the map. Some folks are like, let's not invite very many people, and some folks are the opposite of that. So I think people are a little bit nervous. Most of these programs are operating out of people's households and basements and things like that. It's rare to find, you know, a well-funded organization that does, that centers correspondence with people who are incarcerated. And so, you know, most of the people who are in attendance are going to be people who are not used to standing up in front of a crowd, that's for sure. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Has anything like this, to your knowledge, been attempted before or like been proposed before?
Not that I know of, no. Mm. I'm sure that this kind of work happens often enough. But I think the unique thing here is that we are receiving a call from inside. We don't know exactly where it's coming from because of security reasons, but we know that convicts inside are calling for this relatively massive collective action to begin on September 9th, and groups on the outside are, like ours, are scrambling to try to prepare the most effective kind of support that we can for their work. That's where we developed the idea for holding a convergence like this. And I think these conditions in particular are a little unusual. And I certainly haven't heard of a nationwide strike like this taking place in the United States.
I haven't either. And it's such an interesting like political time these days. I think that people are starting to either be more politicized or more polarized. You can see more like far left and far right activity, as well as people just getting more interested in political things in general because of the state of how things are right now with mainstream electoral politics and other sort of more grassroots or anarchistic politics as well. So it's super, super interesting that all of these things are going on. And prison slavery is definitely a humongous issue and part of the reason why people are doing all of these striking. Maybe if you wanted to talk a little bit about that, that would be awesome.
So incarcerated people are calling for a nationwide strike to end prison slavery. And we, as direct support organizations, are responding to that call by organizing regional gatherings of direct support organizations. In the past several years, thousands of convicts across the country have already been putting their lives on the line to end prison slavery by leading work stoppages and hunger strikes inside of their institutions. Meanwhile, most Americans are blissfully unaware that prison laborers produce food, furniture, pharmaceuticals, lingerie, ships like sea ships, Navy formula, uniforms, and military aircraft for, you know, Lockheed and Martin or Boeing for free or for pennies on the hour. The phenomenon commonly referred to as mass incarceration is not a mistake or an accident produced by a misguided criminal justice system, but rather a relatively conscious injection of capital into the infrastructure of forced labor as a means of production, as well as a relatively conscious commodification of the bodies of disproportionately black and brown convicts.
What do you mean by that?
Mean that this isn't just an irresponsible opportunism on behalf of corrections corporations or state corrections departments, but quite literally a reconstruction of the material conditions of a slave, by which I mean someone who has experienced a social death, like a criminal has experienced a social death from society, just as a slave was not considered fully human in the time before Reconstruction. It's also the conditions produce wealth for their owners, the owners of the corrections corporations, and also the private corporations that take the product of their labor. And people who in turn are worth money to their owners' class, like to the corrections corporations and the state, to trade or sell, just as slaves were before the abolition of slavery. Meanwhile, as per Michelle Alexander's recent book, The New Jim Crow, which I would recommend folks read, some 40 million ex-cons find themselves struggling to survive without hope for economic advancement or even a reasonable chance of subsistence in a job market that discriminates heavily against felons, just like in the Jim Crow South. That's it.
You mentioned that there was going to be some actions at the Bend the Bars conference. Could you talk a little bit more about the schedule of events? And are there any particular things that you're especially looking forward to?
We are hoping that this kind of gathering will be a place for people who are newly interested or passionate about the issues of abolition or prison slavery or any of the things, even just conditions of confinement campaigns, will be able to come to this gathering, get their bearings relatively quickly and begin to contribute to the work in short order. So we're reserving Friday evening of the 26th for groups to introduce themselves informally. And our day programming on Saturday mostly revolves around essentially catching everyone in the room up to speed on what everyone else in the room is working on and what successes and obstacles they've encountered. And then Saturday evening, we'll be hosting a public demonstration. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that demonstration, I'm looking forward to it a great deal. The purpose of the demonstration is to try to get enough media attention that we are able to broadcast announcements of the strike into institutions through the television so that folks who are inside that haven't already heard about what's being organized have the at least, you know, a couple weeks opportunity to prepare for the strike if they choose to participate. And then on Sunday we are expecting to spend the entire day talking amongst ourselves about how to best coordinate our work to support people inside, especially when leaders on the inside begin to experience repression and retaliation from the authorities for having the nerve to stick up for themselves.
Do you have any ideas about that question right off the bat before the conversation?
I believe a lot of it will involve doing our best to support the two highest profile above ground organizations in their capacity to respond through legal means to instances of brutality from the guards, retaliation or repression or anything like that. Those two organizations are the National Lawyers Guild, who has made a formal stance for abolition of prisons, and also officially endorsed the September 9th strike. National Lawyers Guild, of course, is the people in the funny green hats who run around demonstrations taking notes about who the cops are beating up when the demonstration comes to town. In this case, we're hoping that they will get both encouragement and support from anti-prison activists on the outside to do their work more effectively as possible. The other group, of course, is the Industrial Workers of the World. Their Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee is doing excellent work producing newsletters and filing legal complaints on behalf of people who are incarcerated, but they will definitely need to build their capacity to do that in greater numbers as the strike kicks off and as leaders in the movement find themselves facing retaliation from the guards and from legal means. So supporting those two organizations is a big part of it. And also there's such a finding solid ways to communicate effectively with people in such a controlled environment is obviously very difficult. And so I imagine a lot of the coordinating that we'll be doing amongst ourselves on the last day of the convergence will be brainstorming and developing the best ways to keep in contact, even if it's just about the basic information, like which institutions are on lockdown, which institutions have people that are facing retaliation, which institutions are strikes even taking place in. It won't be reported to us in the mainstream news media, obviously. This is the work that we are going to have to do to make sure that the general public knows what events are transpiring and also brings as much attention to the actions of wardens and COs across the country so that basically they have the understanding that they are having their actions scrutinized. Because our experience tells us that if COs and wardens don't understand that their actions are being scrutinized, they will abuse every power they have available to them to bring any kind of resistance to a close.
Certainly. And this idea of, you know, I think media has always been able to be weaponized and against, you know, power and certainly against people who don't have power, perhaps more often. Do you have any favorite media sources that you look to, or you mentioned, and I'm intrigued by this notion of having first come into like an understanding of prison abolition via prison books? I think that's really, really cool. And do you have any alternative media sources that you look to?
Yes, they are mostly, yes, I can even just list them. Why not? Oh. There is a website that is run by a comrade in Wisconsin called Support Prisoner Resistance. Mm-hmm. And it's a blog, but it's one of the best places to find reports of ongoing hunger strikes or new resources available for anti-prison workers or for strikes that are taking place in different parts of the country. That website is called Support Prisoner Resistance, mm-hmm. and the web address is supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org. That's also the Industrial Workers of the World Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee has their own website where they post regular updates about different actions that are taking place in prisons around the country. Mm-hmm. That website is iwoc.noblogs.org. And from there, it's a matter of finding the web addresses of particular convict movements. There are a few that have relatively regularly updated websites. Probably the Free Alabama Movement website, which is freealabamamovement.com, is the best place to start looking through organizations that are by convicts on the inside and whose media is, in large part, the publications written by people on the inside.
Awesome. How many people are you expecting to come to the conference?
Somewhere between 60 and 300.
Whoa.
We're expecting the number 60 is the number that we'll get if we receive just a car from each of the cities that we've already received RSVPs and attention from. And that's groups around Central Ohio and then as far out as St. Louis, Wisconsin, a little bit of the south through maybe Virginia and definitely Kentucky, and as far east as Pittsburgh and maybe Chapel Hill. So we're expecting 60 people to kind of represent the direct support end of things. Mm-hmm. And then the rest, the size ultimately depends on how many organizations feel like they would be able to contribute meaningfully to what we're doing or want to learn enough about what we're doing that they want to continue contributing in the future to anti-prison work.
Definitely.
In correspondence with people who are incarcerated.
Are there any recommendations that you have for attendees of the conference?
Yeah, just remember that this is a gathering that is intended to center the work of convicts, center the work of people who have been incarcerated and center the work of organizations and individuals that do their work in direct correspondence with people who have been or are currently incarcerated. So what that means to say, you know, a party-based organization or an advocacy organization or something like that is that we're not intending to produce an environment where organizations are, you know, heavily recruiting new people into their organization or something. We want to center the struggles of people who are incarcerated and further their work by building outside support, not the other way around. So we as a committee of people are responding to the organizing that convicts are doing much more effectively than we could ever hope to. And so please respect the space by taking it as an opportunity to contribute what you can to the struggles of prisoners and not as an opportunity for recruitment or to bring new people to your organization.
Maybe on that note, do you have any hopes or reservations about the gathering?
As far as hopes, I'm hoping that we are able to support these strikes well enough that they roll and that they keep moving. This is the context that I understand this has taken place in, that some institutions will be organized well enough that they will start to strike across their entire facility on September 9th, and other institutions will not have that kind of unity to do something like that on the 9th and will need to hear about successful actions in other places in order to find the encouragement that they need to pursue a work stoppage or whatever else it is that they might see as the next step in their struggle. So my hope in this case is that we're able to come together as a group of outside supporters and coordinate our actions well enough that we're able to not just have public demonstrations in the city, but take demonstrations to prison gates, not just have demonstrations at prison gates, but have meaningful correspondence with people inside to further the development of anti-prison strategy from in correspondence with people who are currently incarcerated. If there's anything we can tell for sure, it's that the broader movement against mass incarceration and for prison reform has done nothing to stop the incredible speed, incredible rate of growth of the prison industrial complex in our country. And if there's anything that supporters on the outside need to be doing right now, it's listening to the voices of people inside and supporting the work that they're doing to confront the authorities that are holding them down.
And people are doing an immense amount of work, and I would definitely encourage people to check out those news resources that you mentioned earlier.
Yes, please.
How can people learn more about this event? And also, are there any alternate things that people can do who can't attend?
I would say that the easiest way to learn more about what we're doing is to follow our blog. It's at bendthebars.noblogs.org. We encourage people who would like to contribute or who have more specific questions about what we're doing to go ahead and send us an email at bendthebars@riseup.net. We get on our email quite quickly, and we love RSVPs. Hopefully we'll have a better idea of where we're going to fall between 60 and 300 attendees as we get closer to our date. Anti-authoritarians, you know, it's just kind of hard to
I know.
Get people to say what their intentions are. Right?
Hey, I brought 300 of my awesome friends and 400 of their dogs.
And
can we crash on your couch for 3 weeks?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We are helping people find housing while they're here, and we're helping people find, you know, transportation and, you know, even food and whatever the basic necessities are that folks need once they get here. So if you need help getting here, either for a plane ticket or a bus fare or something like that, feel free to send us an email and we will do as best we can to help make you a part of this work.
I also wanted to ask you if there was a way for people to support the Books to Prisoners program that you mentioned at the beginning of this interview.
Excellent question. Start one. They are not especially difficult to start. I think that Books to Prisoners programs that could probably, we can use financial donations, obviously. We do pay for postage, so, but that's most of our cost. So most of our operating expenses is just sending mailings, having people help print things for us and things like that. These are the day-to-day kinds of ways that we look for support. Since I'm not especially enthusiastic about telling you the name of my Books to Prisoners program, I would say that the best way to support Books to Prisoners programs is to look for them in your region and ask them if they want books, ask them if they want money, and ask them if they would like a share of your time.
Awesome.
They always need help, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know one that is ever like, no, we're good, we got this resource-wise.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is all the questions that I have. Is there anything that you wanted to add?
I'm good for now.
Word. Alex, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, Alex, for coming on The Final Straw and talking about Bend at the Bars and about all of the other things as well. It's been a pleasure.
All mine. I appreciate your help.
No worries. Before I let you go, do you have any music recommendations for us to score the show with?
I haven't thought of what I would like my theme song to be in a very long time.
Cool. Well, if you have any further thoughts on that, feel free to email me or anything.
Okay, maybe I'll reach out to the committee and see what kind of work, what kind of songs they should recommend.
Well, give my love to the committee, and maybe we will meet in person one day.
I'd love that. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Alex about the Bend the Bars conference to be convened in Columbus, Ohio on the weekend of August 26th. Again, to learn more about this event, you can visit their website at bendthebars.noblogs.org. And to connect with the organizers, you can email them at bendthebars@riseup.net. Also, to visit the news sources that our guest mentioned, and to learn more about the upcoming National Prisoner Work Strike to be called on September 9th, you can visit the following websites. The freealabamamovement.com, supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org, iwoc.noblogs.org, and additionally, there is prisonlegalnews.org, which is a resource for folks who want more information about the day-to-day litigation that affects convicts and their families.
This next track is A Song for Asada by Common from the album Like Water for Chocolate.
In the spirit of God, spirit of the ancestors, in the spirit of the Black Panthers, in the spirit
of Asada Shakur. We make this movement towards freedom for all those who have been oppressed and all those in the struggle. Yeah, yeah, check it. There were lights and sirens, gunshots fine. Cover your eyes as I describe a scene so violent. Seemed like a bad dream. She laid in the blood puddle, blood bubbled in her chest. Cold air brushed against open flesh, no room to rest. Pain consumed each breath, shot twice with her hands up. Police questioned, but shot before she answered. One panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no arm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved the room to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her. Put mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got chills if they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer. But she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for this German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all. Talkies crackling, I see him where they taking her. Though she kinda knew what made the ride peaceful was the trees and the sky was blue. Arrived to Middlesex prison about 6 in the morning. Uneasy as they pushed her to the second floor in a cell. One cot, no window, face to hell. Put in the basement of a prison with all males and the smell of misery, seedless toilets and centipedes. She exercised, paint, and began to read. 2 years in a hole, her soul grew weak. Away from people so long, she forgot how to speak. She discovered freedom is an unspoken sound, and a wall is a wall and can be broken down. Found peace in the panther she went on trial with, one of the brothers. She had a child with the foulness. They would feed her, hoping she'd lose her seed. Held tight, knowing the fight would live through the sea. In need of a doctor, from her stomach she'd bleed. Out of this situation, a girl was deceived. Separated from her, left to mother the revolution. And lactate to attack hate, cause federal estate was built for a black fate. Her emptiness was filled with beatings and court dates. They fabricated cases, hoping one would stick. And said she robbed places that didn't exist. In the midst of threats on her life and being caged with Aryan whites, through dark halls of hate, she carried the light. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. Yeah, I often wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. So dig it, people. Her grandmother would bring news that she had had a dream. Her dreams always meant what they needed them to mean. What made them real was the action in between. She dreamt that Asada was free in their own house in Queens. The fact that they always came true was the thing. Asada had been convicted of a murder she couldn't have done. Medical evidence shown she couldn't have shot the gun. It's time for her to see the sun from the other side. Time for a daughter to be by her mother's side. Time for this beautiful woman to become soft again. Time for her to breathe and not be told how or when. She untangled the chains and escaped the pain. How she broke out of prison, I could never explain. And even to this day, they try to get to her, but she's free with political asylum in Cuba.
Listen to my love, Asada. Yes, what more is freedom. You asking me about freedom? Asking me about freedom? I'll be honest with you. I know a whole lot more about what freedom isn't and about what it is. Because I've never been free. I can only share my vision with you for the future about what freedom is. The way I see it, freedom is the right to grow. It's the right to blossom. Freedom is the right to be yourself.
And next is Asheville's own Veltchasm with their newly released track, Bodies Putrefying in the Swannanoa, which is off the album by the same name. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of this show, you are free to do so. Just send us an email so that we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop.